And so we are now in Genesis chapter 41. We're following this incredible story of Joseph in the last half of Genesis. And there's just so much to learn. But primarily, the biggest thing that I'm getting out of this story is how to forgive. I struggle with that. If we can just figure that out, how to forgive others. And you know, the hardest thing, even harder than forgiving others, is how to learn to forgive ourselves. And one of the things in Joseph's story that's really unique to his story is the place that dreams play in Joseph's story. You know, we don't really pay much attention or talk much about dreams today, but you know, all throughout the Bible, we see there are times when God speaks to people. He gives them dreams, and he's speaking to people and guiding them through these dreams. And never once in the Bible does it ever say, and God stopped giving people dreams. And so have you ever had a dream and you wondered, is that from God? It's one of those dreams, you know, most of the dreams we have, we forget, right? And we just don't even remember, like, you're just dreaming all night long, who knows what it was. But then you just have this one dream that is, you wake up and you remember it, and it's crystal clear, and you wonder, is God trying to tell me something there? I had a dream like that about 5 or 6 weeks ago. I'm going to tell you about that dream. And it's part of my health story. Now, this is not a made-up story. I make up stories, so this is a true story, all right? And so, as part of my treatment for prostate cancer, and I don't want after the service for people to come, oh, Eddie, that's not what me I'm telling you this about, is to get any attention. I'm doing great, okay? Absolutely great, feeling fine. But I do have prostate cancer, and so as part of my treatment, I've had it. I don't even remember how long. It's been way over a year now. I'm under what's called active surveillance, where the doctor said, we're not going to take out your prostate. We're not going to give you radiation. We're just going to keep an eye on it. And like I've told you before, that's like saying, we found a rattlesnake in your house. We're just going to leave it there and watch it and see what happens, all right? So, okay, that's kind of weird, but we'll do that. So part of the treatment is watching it, is having what's called a biopsy, all right, which I was scheduled to have 5 or 6 weeks ago, and I didn't want to do it, all right? I was nervous about it. It's just a miserable thing, and the reason I didn't want to do it is because a year ago, starting out with my active surveillance, I had a biopsy, and I didn't want to have another one. I promise you, you don't. Any of you men who've had one of those things, like you walk into the room where you're going to have the procedure, and you feel like you've stepped into a room where there's a movie, and it's where they're getting ready to torture somebody, and all of the torture emblems are just lying there. Like you think they would cover them up or something, and all these long devices, and you're thinking, those are going to go into my body. And sure enough, you're not imagining that. And so the doctor comes in, and I don't know, the best way I can describe it is he's got something like an air gun, okay? And I asked him last time, I shouldn't have said, can I take a look at that? He showed me the needle that's in the air gun. I promise you, it's not getting bigger. It was about this long. And he's saying, you know, when I shoot, he pulls a trigger, and you feel this shoot of air, and then this needle that goes into your prostate. It's just horrible. But the good part about a year ago is I read up on it, and they were probably, as I was in the waiting room, you're going to have about 10 samples taken. So I'm counting. Every time he pulls a trigger, 1, 2, 3, we get all the way to 9, and I knew he would say, all right, Eddie, last one. But no, he didn't have any good bedside manners at all. He just kept shooting away. He took 21 samples. That was a year ago. And so I got one scheduled for about 6 weeks earlier this year. And I'm thinking about, I don't want to go. And then one night I had a dream. And this is so true, okay? I had a dream. Isn't it a shame when the preacher has to say it's so true, you know? So I had this dream. And in the dream, I went to the doctor to get my biopsy. And he only gave me two shots. And I'm telling you, I remember that. And I was so incredibly happy. I remember the happy feeling I had, and I woke up, and I'm thinking, and this was right in the middle of when we're just starting out with Joseph and all these dreams, and these dreams are from God, and I'm thinking, All right, that's cool. Two shots. So I went to the doctor the day of my biopsy, and I just said, hey, before we get started, just want you to know I had a dream a couple of nights ago, and you only took two samples, just saying. Well, evidently, my doctor doesn't believe in God. He took 18. Okay, not 21, but still 18 samples. It was horrible. So I don't know, was that from God? How do you know when you have a dream that's from God? Well, we were walking into chapter 41 of Genesis, and there are two dreams we're going to see. Now, I can't read it all. It's a really long chapter. You have to read it. I'm going to tell you the story. You read it. But these dreams are clearly from God. And it's fascinating because in this story, we saw at the beginning of the story in chapter 37, it was two dreams that got Joseph into all kinds of trouble. Remember that with his brothers. Then, now we get to chapter 41, and it's going to be two dreams. It's really interesting. You see three sets of dreams. They're all two, two, and two. The baker and the cupbearer, Pharaoh has two, and Joseph had two about his family bowing down to him. So now he's going to have two dreams that got him in trouble. Now in chapter 41, there are going to be two dreams. They're going to take Joseph from being in prison to the palace of the Pharaoh, to being elevated to prime minister. What we're going to see as we transition from chapters 40 to 41 is like a fast track, rags to riches story. In one move of one verse, of a few verses of chapter, from transitioning from one chapter to the other, Joseph is going to go from adversity to prosperity. And if you're looking for, you know the verse, it's a very popular verse that we know from Romans chapter 8, and we know, and I'm quoting from actually the ESV, we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good for those who were called according to his purpose. What does that mean? All things work together for good. This story, incredible. It tells us exactly what that means. So let's go into the story. Got to start a little bit earlier in chapter 40. As you remember from last week that Joseph's in prison. This guy that was a cupbearer used to work for the Pharaoh. He's in prison with the baker. The baker and the cupbearer have dreams, and he says to the cupbearer, your dream, he interprets the cupbearer's dream, says, this dream means in 3 days, listen, this is good news for you, buddy. You're going to get out of prison, and you're going to go back to serving the Pharaoh as his cupbearer. But he says, I need you to do me a favor. When you get back to the palace, would you tell the cupbearer, would you tell the Pharaoh about me? And just tell him, it's not fair. I wasn't supposed to be in here, all right? And he'll let me out. And the cupbearer says, yeah, you got it. I'm with you. And so the chapter ends, perhaps you remember this, where it says the cupbearer got out of prison. He went to the house of the Pharaoh, and he forgot all about Joseph. Like, how could you forget? How could you forget? And we looked at how Joseph was just forgotten. So often we find ourselves in that place. So then we move into chapter 41 in verse 1, and it tells us he wasn't just forgotten for a couple of days, but this went on for 2 years. Every day waiting and waiting and waiting. It's like, God, could you just remind him? Could you just do something? This is not right. Then finally, I guess, so why didn't God give the cupbearer a dream to say, hey, remember Pharaoh? Why didn't he give the Pharaoh the dream immediately? Why did he wait 2 years? Think about that. God has a way that's different than ours as far as timing is concerned. But finally, 2 years later, the Pharaoh has these two dreams. They're about cows and they're about this grain, stalks of grain. And he wakes up and he's like, just, like, what's that about? He remembers it. It was clear. And it was so clear that it was like he was troubled by it. It was bothering him. But he talked to his magicians and the soothsayers and all of the wise men in the palace. None of them could figure it out. And in the midst of trying to figure this out, the cupbearer finally, like, the lights go off 2 years later, right? and said, hey, wait a minute. I remember this guy who interpreted my dreams when I was in prison. You remember Pharaoh? You put me in prison. Well, he interpreted my dreams and he was dead on accurate. The Pharaoh says, let's talk to that guy. And so the servants of the Pharaoh went to get Joseph. They had him bathed. They had him shaved. They had him put on clean clothes. The next thing you know, boom, Joseph is standing before the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh says, hey, I had these dreams and I heard you can interpret dreams. And I want you to notice what Joseph said in response to the Pharaoh. It says, Joseph, in chapter 41 and verse 16, Joseph answered Pharaoh, I can't do it. It's not me. It's not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. I just want to stop. This isn't my main point of emphasis, but it kind of is. You got to appreciate here and notice Joseph's humility. Joseph's not the same person when we first started looking at him. In chapter 37, at the beginning, there's some pride and there's some arrogance. Hey, all you guys are bowing down to me. I'm the guy in charge. I'm like the center of the universe. Got him in trouble. But now Joseph has been through some stuff. He's been in the pit. They were going to kill him. Then they said, oh, let's sell him. Then he was sold into slavery. Then he got falsely accused and ended up in prison. And all through these circumstances, it's chipped away at Joseph's pride. And that's really important because you understand, one of the most difficult, as we're trying to figure out, how do you forgive? One of the most difficult, one of the biggest obstacles in forgiving is just this pride that digs in. God's been working on Joseph, bringing him, as we sang, he humbling him through his life circumstances, setting the stage. We're going to see next week, it's incredible, to bring Joseph face to face with his brothers. And so the Pharaoh says to Joseph, well, here's my two dreams. He tells him the two dreams, and then Joseph goes on to say, I can tell you what those dreams mean. And so he tells him what those dreams mean about those cows and the grains. He says, you're going to have, and this is a pretty common story we know, you're going to have 7 years of like just crazy awesome crops, harvest, all you can imagine. And then after that, there's going to be 7 years of famine. Imagine a nation, imagine America, not 7 months or 7 days or 7 weeks, 7 years of famine. That's the interpretation of your dream. But then Joseph kind of steps up and gets so bold as he says, he decides, let me just give the Pharaoh a little bit of advice here. He says, what I would suggest that you do, and I believe God was guiding him in this advice, wants you to take, during these incredible, beautiful 7 years of harvest, store it up, so that when the famine comes on, Egypt's ready. And Egypt can not only help his people, but people from other nations as well. And Pharaoh thinks, phenomenal idea. I think it's amazing how Pharaoh just went for it. He so trusted Joseph. So much so that he says, Joseph, I want you to be in charge of that. I want you to be in charge of storing it all up, and I want you to be in charge of distributing it. So much so, he says, Joseph, I want to elevate you. This is all in chapter 41, to a high position of authority in the land of Egypt. You're going to be second under me, kind of like the prime minister. You kids that are taking notes, this is one of the answers I'm getting ready to give you. And so he, the Pharaoh gave Joseph his royal clothes. Imagine what he was wearing in prison all that time. Now he gave him royal clothes. He gave him, he didn't have a ring made for him. The Pharaoh actually took his ring off, and he gave it to Joseph. And he gave Joseph, it says, his second chariot. That'd be kind of like, here's Air Force Two. I got Air Force One. You get Air Force Two, all right? This is for you, Joseph. And then he had Joseph ride through the city in Egypt there in chariot number two, and had everybody bowing down. Remember those dreams? Bowing down to Joseph. And honestly, I'm just kind of wondering if Potiphar and his wife were checking that out. We're noticing they had to have been. I'm just wondering if they, the ones that falsely accused him and threw him into prison, they had him bow down. All these people were bowing down before Joseph as he was riding along. And so something that's really important to notice here, it wasn't in a church that God placed Joseph to be an influence, which is a good place to be a person of influence. But he put Joseph in a political position of power in a pagan foreign land. That's just the way God works. Putting darkness, light into darkness. Strategically placing people out there to be an influence for his kingdom purpose. So never, ever, ever, sure, it's great to have ministries of service in here, but never underestimate the role God can use in you through your life out there, whether it be at work or school or wherever you may be. Pharaoh gave Joseph a wife, and he, through his wife, they actually had two sons together. And we read in chapter 41 and verse 46 that Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So just do the math, okay? How old was he when his brother said, "We're going to kill you"? He was 17 when he was thrown in the pit, sold into slavery, and imprisoned. He was like that for 13 years. And so it took a lot longer than Joseph would have wanted. He had to wait. Joseph had to go through a lot of pain and a lot of hardship, a pit, slavery, prison. Promise held true. God works all things for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. What I want us to do, though, in this lesson, I want us to lean into the names that Joseph gave the two sons that were born to him. Because this story, as I'm trying to learn, God help me to learn to forgive. The names of these two sons are symbolic building blocks to forgiveness. So let's pick up reading the story in chapter 41 in verses 50 through 52. Before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. Asenath, the daughter of, now that's his wife, okay? The daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore them to him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For he said, "God has made me forget all my hardship in all my father's house." The name of the second he called Ephraim, "for God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." So clearly, these two names, he named his children as symbolic representations of, this is pretty much my life story. This is what I have experienced. Now you might be confused with the name of his firstborn son, Manasseh. It means to forget. Joseph said, "I'm going to name him Forget." Imagine that being your name. What's your name? Forget. I forgot. God has made, Joseph said, made me forget all my hardship in all my father's house. How do you do that? How do you forget? Like, seriously? How do you forget that someone falsely accused you of sexual assault that you resisted and you spent how long in prison? I don't remember that. No, how do you forget that? How do you forget that your brothers, not just anybody, your brothers wanted to kill you. They threw you in the pit and they said, "No way, let's make some money off of them." How do you forget that they sold you into slavery? In the theme of forgiveness, we use the phrase forgive and forget. Or have you ever said this, when someone has really done something wrong, they've wronged you, they've been unkind to you, they treated you unfairly, and you just respond to them, "Well, just forget it." So it's that simple. Just forget it. So is that what's going to happen? In chapter 45, it's an unbelievable story. Joseph is going to come, is going to forgive his brothers. And is this the way he did it? Is it just going to be like some dementia comes over him or something where he just doesn't remember anything that happened? Hey guys, is that what forgiveness is? Some psychological feat of erasing what happened? Or is it just minimizing it with this trite expression, "Oh, forget it, prison, trying to kill me, selling me into slavery, forget it"? No. It's none of that. I say to Joseph, what do you mean you have forgotten all your hardships and you've forgotten your father's household? You just mentioned them. When we come to the pinnacle of the story, when Joseph forgives his brothers, he first says, this is what you did. And then he forgives them. So whatever forgiveness is, it's not, I don't remember that anymore. And it's not, no big deal. It's not that trite expression. Forgiveness, I think, from Joseph's example, it's a decision that you make. This happened. Man, it hurt. It's real. But I'm making a choice right now with the birth of the son, or right now from this day forward, I'm not going to be shackled by that. That is not going to control me. The pain of my past is not going to define me. I am moving on with my life. I'm leaving the past in the past, and I'm not going to treat those who hurt me based upon what they did in the past. I'm moving on with my life. I'm making a choice to leave the past there. That's Manasseh. And then with Ephraim, the son's name, was making fruitful. God has made me fruitful. That means, wow, God has blessed me in the land of my affliction, which is really interesting to put this together. God made Joseph fruitful in the land of his affliction, I would say, because Joseph was faithful also in the land of his affliction. And so I take these two names, Manasseh and Ephraim, and their symbolic meaning, and I put them together, and I get this idea that in spite of this, in spite of the trials of my past, God has blessed me, and I'm making a choice right now to not allow the past circumstances of my life and the hurt that others have caused me to deny me and rob me of a future life of blessings that God has in store for me. And I think that's important to understand, because some people, they just hold on to past hurt until it starts holding on to them. And they live there. God has incredible blessings, Ephraim, in store for them. And some hold on to past hurt because for me to let go of it and move into the blessings, it's going to give the impression to the people who hurt me that everything has worked out okay. And I don't want them to ever think that. I want them to never forget what they have done to me. Some people hold on to past troubles because it's like a security blanket. It's like it becomes their identity. And they hold on to past troubles, and the past hurts is a way of continually punishing the ones who hurt them. Do you see what you have done to me? That's just not Joseph. Joseph has made a decision with the birth of his two sons, a clear choice to not hold on to the past and not let the past hold on to him. And he's stepping forward into the future, embracing God's blessings. And you know what? Where do we read about that? I believe that's exactly what the Apostle Paul is speaking about in the letter to the Philippians. As Paul, his struggle wasn't learning to forgive others. His struggle was learning to forgive himself. Because he had been horrible. He was guilty of some despicable things against many Christians. And as Paul is kind of talking about my past and talking about where God is leading me now, Paul writes these very similar words. He says, one thing I do, chapter 3 and verse 13. Notice, he doesn't say, one thing I feel. I finally feel this. No, it's not about your feelings. The feelings are hard. We're going to see that in Joseph's story. One thing I do, I'm making an active choice. One thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining towards what lies ahead. I learn to forgive myself by making a choice that my mistakes of the past are not going to paralyze me. I refuse to allow them to paralyze me from my life in the present. They will not define me. They will not control me. As Paul goes on to write, I press on. I'm moving on toward the goal for the prize of the upward call in Christ Jesus. And you hear that, You know, as you, when you're putting this together, what are they going to think when I say that? What am I going to say as a response to what I think they're thinking? Is I think you're probably thinking, Eddie, that's really nice. Sounds really good. But I can't do that. Just forget it. Move on. I can't do that. And I would suggest that perhaps you're right. You can't do that. That's why you got to not miss a very important, two and very important phrases in chapter 41 in verse 51 when Joseph says, God has made me forget. In verse 52, God has made me fruitful. Bring Joseph down from this pedestal as this guy in a Marvel movie that just got these magic powers to interpret dreams, to blow stuff off from the past and just move into the future. It was God who gave him the ability to interpret dreams. It was God who gave him the ability to do what he couldn't do, to let go of this and to step forward into the future. It was God who was helping Joseph do what Joseph couldn't do on his own, to have a heart like God's, to forgive. That's the very heart of God towards us. And I love the verse in Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 12 where God says, I will remember, that's talking about us, okay? I will remember their sins no more. What do you mean? How do you remember? God, you forgot all that stuff I did? I mean, it was a lot. I'll remember. What do you mean by that? He clarifies that at the beginning of the verse. I will be merciful. You know, mercy means I'm not going to treat you based upon what you deserve from the past. That's just not the way I'm going to act. I will be merciful toward their iniquities. Iniquities, that's a good fancy word, meaning the hurts that we caused God. By God's sovereign choice, he doesn't hold against us and treat us as our sins deserve, but instead he shows us mercy, and we see that flowing. This is the gospel of Jesus Christ, flowing from the cross of Christ. But not only does he not treat us as our sins deserve, but then he pours out us Ephraim, blessings of that which we don't deserve by his grace. And now he calls us to reflect that, be that towards others. And so now, having formed in Joseph through his life experiences a heart of humility, having shaping and forming in Joseph and enabling Joseph to forget the past, to leave it there, and to step in the future, God is preparing Joseph to come face to face with his brothers. And that's where we pick up the story next time. So I want to close. I want to go back to what we talked about earlier with Pharaoh. You remember how we said that God used two dreams to speak to Pharaoh, and it kind of left Pharaoh kind of troubled. I just wonder. I mean, Pharaoh wasn't even church-going, believing. He was a pagan, idolatry-worshipping guy, and God was speaking to him. All right. I just wonder, is God speaking to you in some way? Oh, he's creative, isn't he? Maybe he's using dreams. Maybe he's using your child. Maybe he's using creation. Now, you know, in the Bible, he used a donkey. He can even use a donkey. He can use a preacher. Most of all, he speaks through his word. As God spoke to Pharaoh, it says he was troubled. That's like something, that feeling. Could it be that something that you're feeling, that troubling feeling, is from God? It's a conviction. God has something he's wanting to say to you. So the question there is, what is God saying to you? And then accompanying that is, are you listening? Are you listening? The greatest way God has spoken to us is by the life and the teachings of Jesus Christ. That's where Joseph's story, it's a foreshadowing of that. It's pointing in that direction. As a matter of fact, the Hebrew author writes in chapter 1, he says, long ago, at many times, in many ways, God spoke to our fathers, like in so many different ways, many ways. He's so creative. Who knows how he might be speaking to you? But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his Son. The Hebrew writer goes on to write, today, if you hear his voice, don't harden your heart. Oh, open your ears, open your heart to receive God's word to you today. So let's close our eyes. Let's take a quiet moment to pray. But you know, when you pray, you don't always have to be talking to be praying. Let's just be quiet and let's listen. Let's listen. Father, we open our ears. Help us to open our ears. We can be stubborn. We seek to open our hearts. Oh, Father, speak to us as each of us individually need to be spoken to, wherever we are in our lives. Sometimes what you say is hard to hear. Help us to have the courage to not only hear, but to listen in obedience. And Father, it's easy for me to preach, just forget it, let it go, and move forward. We thank you that you're the one who enables that, and we confess our inability and our weakness. Oh God, shape in us hearts to leave the past in the past and to embrace your blessings given to us by your grace. Shape in us a heart like yours, a heart to forgive. So I'd ask that you would stand now, and we're going to offer this song as a prayer to God. And if you've come this morning with a heavy burden, and we don't want you leaving with that, I want to encourage you to grab someone, maybe ask one of our shepherds. Our prayer room is open, and say, would you pray with me? And if this morning you know someone that has come with a heavy burden, then I would encourage you to don't be shy, don't be hesitant, get out of your seat and go give them a hug and pray over them. There's certainly a lot of needs here this morning. Let's go before God in prayer.